The information presented is for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are not necessarily the opinions of any Daikin company. This information should not be confused for accounting, legal, medical, or other professional advice. Please seek advice from a qualified professional for any specific questions.
Welcome to the Accelerated HVAC Success Program. My name is Ben Middleton. I'm the National Sales Training Manager for the Goodman, Amana, and Daikin brands. Today, we're joined here with Doug Donovan, the CEO of Interplay Learning Solutions. Doug, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Ben. Good to see you.
So, Doug, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How in the world did you get to founding Interplay Learning Solutions and getting started off with that?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a long story. So I'll give you the brief version.
Okay.
I was with another company and we were training energy auditors. Mm-hmm. People go around, you know, fixing houses, getting them, you know, insulation better, et cetera. And what we found with them was they were struggling to get field training time. It's hard to bring a class full of students through someone's home. Mm. And when we found that impediment, we said, geez, how do we train these folks in the field without literally going into the field? And we looked in the military, medical, and aviation industries, and they were using simulations extensively to mimic in the field training. And we looked around the trades and HVAC specifically and energy efficiency, and we were surprised that companies weren't really delivering any kind of simulation training for those learners. And that was really the genesis of this whole thing. And that was, you know, almost a decade ago now.
So, you know, it's interesting. I've heard for many years that I've been in the industry, over 20 years, there's always been a challenge with finding new employees. But there truly is a skills trade gap today. Can you tell us a little bit about the current status of that skills trade gap and what you kind of see in trends and what's
sure.
happening there?
Yeah. It's certainly, I think it's well accepted and known now. Mm-hmm. People have been talking about this trade, the skills gap, as you said, for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I would say the things that have changed the most are sort of a couple things. One, when you think about the gap, you really have two pieces of that. You have the skills and you have the workers. And mm-hmm. so let's talk a little bit about the workers. One thing that we've seen as a change is the conversation about the careers and the skilled trades has changed, right? A decade ago, there was a little more chatter about make sure your kid goes to a four-year institution. The skilled trades were really overlooked for almost a generation. Mm-hmm. And that's really changed even in the last 3 or 4 years. There's a lot more respect for these and a lot more understanding for these careers, how both, you know, financially lucrative they can be, as well as, you know, just real careers where you can go as high as you want versus some of the gig jobs or the hourly wage jobs that aren't really careers. And that happened in a couple ways. One was during COVID, the term we started using for this worker group was essential. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a real mind shift now, and you see it in all communities where parents are asking their high schools, well, you know, what are the other options for my child who doesn't seem like they want to spend another 5-6 years in a, you know, classical academical institution? So there's a lot more interest there. So that's exciting. And that's been a shift we've seen really in the last 3 years. But there's still a big gap in that people don't necessarily need to know what to do now. Say, okay, I'm interested, but where do I start? So the good news is, while the skills gap exists, at least on the worker side, there's interest. And so hopefully, you know, we'll talk more, I'm sure, today mm-hmm. about different ways people are entering these trades. But with this increased interest, hopefully we can start to change that gap. On the skill side, that's always a challenge, right? These are really challenging careers. HVAC, as you know, mechanical, electrical. You got to be part detective, part physicist, a part electrician. And mm-hmm. so, you know, developing those skills is no easy task. And so companies have been trying to figure out, how do we do this? Well, historically, they've been able to just rely on either, you know, finding people out of trade schools or families where there'd been long history of trades workers. That hasn't happened the last decade. So you really have to start building your own workforce. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to see companies really start understanding they have to play a bigger role in solving the skills gap really for their individual company. So that's some of the trends we're seeing.
It, you know, it's interesting also, not only is it just, you know, that legacy of handing down those skill sets and really having that true craftsman type mentality, but also technology is changing at an unbelievable speed as well. You know, I always look at our industry, and it's hard for me to believe that, you know, just about 100 years ago, majority of homes were still heated with wood.
That's right. That's
and then
right.
we
yeah.
went to coal.
Yeah.
And then from coal, we went to oil. And then from oil to natural gas. And now there's this emergence of electrification that we see.
Sure. Yeah.
And so the technology keeps adapting as well.
That's right. But what hasn't kept up is the technology on the training side.
Mm-hmm.
They've really historically relied on on-the-job training, right? We call it follow Bob, right? You take your best technician, Bob, Jose, Sally, whoever it is, and you say, follow Bob. And that's been the primary mechanism to train people. And that's a little tougher these days for a number of reasons. One, because of the skills gap, you have a retiring. Bob mm-hmm. is now retired. So who's there to follow? That's one of the challenges. And two, this younger generation, that's not really how they want to learn out of the gate, right? If you ask an 18-year-old, 26-year-old, et cetera, to buy a pizza, to find a date, to, you know, find directions, they go to their phone first, right? Digital first, everything. And while they certainly like the hands-on component of it, they really rely on a digital medium first. And so we find a lot, the industry, while the technology and like what you guys do and putting out, you know, the boxes and all the technology that actually make the, you know, conditions the air, the education side hasn't really kept up. And so that's part of what we're doing at Interplay is trying to catch that up and deliver training to where the learners are today, which is a lot more digital natives. And how do we do that in an engaging way to invite them into the industry? And then when they're there, really to develop their skills.
So what strategies are you seeing in that digital space to address these challenges that we have?
Well, we see a couple of things, right? Number one, that we see some employers recognize that this skills gap that they've heard about and talked about for 15 years isn't going away.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, we talk about all these trends that are slowly turning in their favor. In our lifetime, they're still not going to, quote, solve the skills gap. And so companies have to recognize they've got to solve the skills gap for their company, right? They can't just complain like, ah, oh, it's not like it was. I need to solve this for my company. Mm-hmm. And so there's some that are really buying in that this is a systematic thing that isn't a Band-Aid and off we go. It's we've got to build a new system of building a supply line of new labor and a foundation of good training. As we talked about, we mentioned the follow Bob. Follow Bob is kind of hit or miss, right? Bob may or may not be a good trainer.
Right.
So you really need a good foundational training program, particularly when you're trying to build your own workforce from people with good attitudes, but maybe not necessarily that trades craft in their blood like you talked about earlier. And so what we found at Interplay is often the people who are buying our solution are out there trying to solve their own workforce skills gap and saying, how do I build a foundational training program so that I can take somebody with low or no skill and develop them into a tradesperson? And that's a trend we're seeing a lot of.
With technology and with the pandemic, we saw all kinds of you know, different technologies emerge. We saw Zoom, we saw people jump into video, we saw, you know, this emergence of everybody doing podcasts like we're doing right now and
right,
all this other
right.
technology that's happening. But you started to hear terms like Zoom fatigue and
yeah.
you started to see overuse of a lot of this technology.
Yeah.
Are there right ways or wrong ways to utilize technology for addressing the skills gap and for getting information and training out there?
I mean, certainly. I would say, you know, on the whole, the pandemic was actually good for digital training because those who were resistant, particularly, let's say, you know, HVAC techs who didn't learn with any kind of digital means, they were a little skeptical. Could you really learn a trade using these digital tools? And during the pandemic, they were kind of forced to face it and use it. And what they found on the other side of it was, wow, it's really powerful and really effective. And particularly when it's used correctly, which is a balance, right? Like we're quick to tell people, like, we don't expect to create tradespeople, master tradespeople using 3D simulations, even virtual reality and all the online training. You've got to get out in the field. You got to get your hands dirty. But just like we said, where we started with this, with like military medical aviation, mm-hmm. there's always a blended approach, right? Somebody would train, they would do exercises in a tank simulator, but then they get in the real tank. Mm-hmm. They do exercises in a, you know, a medical facility training thing, and then they'll be a resident for years and years. So there's got to be a combination, and we really work closely with our clients and customers now on how to build that, a foundational digital training program to underpin the efforts, and then really a more sophisticated, planned in the field and on the job training. And when it's done right, you know, you're talking years long programs. So really developing skills and advancing careers and wages, and then the output on the business side is, has been obvious for many. So it's been exciting to see. I mean, I wouldn't root, you know, for a pandemic again, but for our business personally, it really did. It provided a little boost and taking some of the skeptics and moving them either off the fence or over the fence, and now recognizing the power of digital training.
So how do you see employees getting involved in their training journey and taking an active role in that development?
Yeah, they have to, right? They've figured out now, and we learned this years ago, we actually sold a lot of our training simulations and some of our training content into schools, mm-hmm. into the trade schools, right? And we still have hundreds, of more than about 150 schools who use our technology for their training programs. But even if you add all of those up, they are by far well behind the employers as the educators. The biggest educators in this industry are the employers by a factor of probably 8 to 1. And so, but that always wasn't appreciated, right? If you ask an HVAC owner 15 years ago, what are the key things to your business? Rarely would they list, I need to be a great educator. Mm. I need to be a great trainer. I need to build a learning organization. You just didn't hear that. Now, the more that the companies that are higher performing, the highest performing, really have committed to that. So they've recognized like it's not as good as like, I just need to find a good person and put them out in the truck and off we go and here's our business. I mean, you said it from the outset, like the technology has changed so fast. You've got as an organization be able to develop your technicians to change along with that.
So do you see gamification playing an important role in training as we continue to move forward?
I mean, certainly. I mean, one thing that we hear a lot when we're successful is when they look at our digital training, particularly simulations, they'll say something like, oh, this is training my techs will actually use, right? Mm-hmm. Because digital, we didn't invent online training and certainly not for the trades. It was around for a long time, but it was typically like a PDF of a textbook, mm-hmm. right? So that is not very engaging. And so if you can engage it with simulations, if you can make it engaging with gamification, we'll use leaderboards. People will have points marketplaces where if they advance to a certain level and show demonstrated skill, or they're really showing an appetite to learn, they might get these points in a marketplace that you can use at a company to buy tools, etc. So we've seen some really interesting gamification done by the employers. We also built some into our platform directly, but really the employers are the ones who are going to lead it. And it takes a service manager, whoever's in charge that, really to commit to it and say, look, we need to build a culture of learning here and development.
So with that culture of learning and development and employees taking an active role, how does that equate when they're talking to other people that may be interested in joining the trades and actually using employees for helping recruiting and bringing more people into your organization?
I mean, we talk about the three R's: recruit, ramp, retain, mm-hmm. right? And our thesis is, people think of it wrong. They work really hard on the recruit side, but then if they don't have a good ramp program, you're just going to have a leaky bucket, right? I'm bringing mm-hmm. somebody in, they're a little discouraged, 3 months, 6 months, it's not really working out, out they go. Now think of it a different way. Invest in your ramp program. So you're really developing employees. Now when you recruit somebody, they get in there, they start developing, they appreciate it, they have visibility into their career and career development, they're more likely to be retained, to stay on. Further, they also then recruit better. Hey, this is a great company to work for. Come work here. So we really think the ramp part is the keystone to that recruit, ramp, and retain. And if you have a really solid ramp program that you believe in, it allows you as the business owner or whoever the hiring agent is to widen the aperture of who you're hiring. Because you know, look, I can hire for attitude, maybe test for some basic skill, basic mechanical skill, because I know once I put them in my program, they're going to be successful. Whereas when you don't have that program, it's a little harder to hire. You can't quite widen that aperture and really just hire for attitude.
So How, in what ways is technology being leveraged as in order to develop this training program for a company? What technologies are you leveraging in your platform?
Well, a couple things. One is, sort of answer the first part of that.
Yeah.
The having a digital offering already makes a difference. So we use virtual reality as one of the things mm-hmm. that we use. We don't have the lion's share of our customers using it because it's still like really you need someone real tech forward to use it. Most just use tablets and even desktops to do it. But the VR part of it's really interesting on the recruiting side. So we'll see a lot of our customers use the VR at job fairs mm-hmm. and you know visit high schools with it and give someone a taste of what an HVAC tech job actually looks like. And that really excites people. We have a story out there we did with Meta, the big VR company, obviously formerly Facebook. And they just did this 2-minute video about this kid in Memphis and was on a wrong track. And then he got in the headset and saw the Interplay training and his family was actually an HVAC family, but he wanted no part of it until he did the digital training. So there's no question that sort of advanced digital training is attractive to this new generation. It gives them some insight in what's going on. Now, the platform itself is sort of classic cloud-based, right? So people can do it from anywhere, which is critical for this learner. They're in trucks, they're in distribution centers, they're in homes, they're at their own home, or they're at their company headquarters. So you got to be able to log in from anywhere. So we have a cloud-based solution with this digital training. We'll use real basic classic PowerPoint, voiceover PowerPoints, but the difference is incredibly dynamic, short burst micro learning, speaking to this learner who's got that little more of a TikTok mentality. And so you got to be able to hit them fast and move them fast in their understanding. I mentioned it several times. We use extensive use of simulations. And for those who haven't seen this type of thing, it really looks like video games. It mm-hmm. looks like Fortnite. But instead of trying to, kill the bad guy, you're troubleshooting a heat pump or the like with with tools that look and act and behave like they really do in the real world. So those are some of the primary tools we use for our digital training.
And you're seeing, so are you seeing more and more of an adoption of the overall VR from the flat screen environment?
We are. It's slow but steady.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a faster adoption just of diving into digital training as a fundamental solution, right? There's, if you think about it, in the last 5-6 years, a lot of these HVAC service companies are just going to tablets, right? They're starting to build in operating systems, and whether they're using, there's 5 or 6 of the big operating systems. So they're starting to get used to the digital part of their job. And so here we come along with really deep catalog of digital learning. So now they start matching those things. They've started to make some digital investments or technological investments. And here we have this great learning solution that we can put right in there. Now, the more advanced companies, and particularly the ones who have already, maybe they've already invested in a training lab and the like, who really understand the value of training, they're actually quicker to adopt the VR because of their ability to handle technology, but also because of their ability to appreciate the power of like simulation and scenario-based learning, right? You can put someone, I mentioned troubleshooting a heat pump. We can serve up 30 different faults for a heat somebody to learn how to like learn the heat pump system. Think about how you can condense the learning time, right? If I'm gonna take you in the field for the next 5 years, and we're going to see a bunch of heat pumps, how many faults are you really going to see? Well, we can put you in front of 30 in 3 hours. Those same 30 might take you 3 years in real life scenarios to see those. And again, it's not to replace that time in the field, but hopefully it really, one, condenses your ability to move out that curve. So when you are presented with that troubleshooting, you've built the good diagnostic and mental memory to build to go right through the diagnostic steps efficiently, et cetera.
So what sort of barriers to entry do you see with companies adopting all of this great technology into their training and learning?
The biggest by far is a true commitment from the company, right? If we always say, if they just throw the training over the wall and say, hey, guys and girls, there's training there. It's free. I paid for it. Good luck. Like, we're just not going to find a successful program,
sure.
Right? Because training is hard. It requires some sticks and some carrots. And where we're successful is when the program is developed and committed to by the company. So the biggest, to us, the biggest barrier is not that there isn't appetite, because now we see appetite from everybody, but then we see usage problems sometimes where you don't have somebody saying, look, this is why you want to train. Your skills will get better. The company will, the numbers will get better for the company, which then is going to lead for a better career opportunity for you, et cetera. And so you need someone to commit to it. That's by far the biggest barrier, because technologically there's no barriers. This data, digital native, no problem. They're in and out. I mean, it's fun watching a 19-year-old use our stuff. Sometimes they'll find stuff we don't even find really quickly, like in the simulation or the like, because they're so comfortable there. So that's not it. It's really, do they have visibility into why they're doing this training? And has the company built a program to support that and promote that?
So it's been interesting to be my non-scientific observation at trade shows. We've been partnered with you guys for a long time now, and we've been bringing the VR headsets out there. It seems to me like those that are over 50 love this, and they will put on the VR headsets, and they'll be in a trade show, and they'll be fixing stuff and doing stuff. Those that typically are under 30, they're a little bit more reserved, they're a little bit more shy, but they will come up, they'll put the headset up, and then they'll get doing it. But there's this group in between 30 and 50 that are just resistant, and they will cross their arms and they're saying, I'm not putting that headset on.
Yeah.
Have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah, we've seen some interesting trends like that. So there's a couple things with the technology is still new, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some things that we don't love about it. And over time, they'll change. But one is the term is, the famous brand was Oculus, occlude. Mm-hmm. You block out the rest of the world and we put you in an environment in a basement or on a roof with the real equipment, which is amazing and powerful. But in a trade show, you've now blocked out everyone around you. That's uncomfortable for a lot of people, and particularly for that middle group. For some reason, you're right. The 50-pluses are kind of like, you know what? I've done it. I've done it all. What are they going to do? Laugh at me? I've been laughed at plenty. I'm fine. But there is the little gap there where people have been more resistant. And I really think it's that the fear of like somebody making fun of you behind your back. It takes a little, there's some social anxiety around it. And we find that actually a lot of VR users start at home because of that, like that risk aversion of like being laughed at. But we're starting to see that break down more and more. I mean, we've had some, you can imagine we've been doing this for a decade, and we started with VR in 2016, 2015. And when we first showed it to people, people would say, I'm not putting that thing on. Like, no way, no way. And now you see a lot more interest, and at least, 7 out of 10 are like, okay, put it on. Let's see what it looks like. Now, the fun part is when they take it off.
Right.
And you've seen it many times, and they just go, holy, and usually there's a swear word. Like, I thought I was on that roof fixing that 2-ton unit. I completely forgot I was standing in this big exhibitor hall. And just the ability to really trick your brain and put you there, you can imagine for the power of learning, how getting that presence level up to 100% is just incredibly powerful for learning. But for those people who first try, when they take it off and they just... their brain, they realize what just happened. That's a fun moment for me. Like, rarely in your life do you get to present something that kind of presents a wow moment for somebody. And for those willing to try it, I mean, there's a true wow moment.
So here's the big million-dollar question. How do you track the effectiveness of training?
Yeah, so it always starts with the metrics of the company, right? Are they tracking callbacks? Are they tracking time to truck? Are they tracking job time efficiency, the things that drive the P&L for every business? And we find various levels of that with different of our customers. Some are really good about those metrics. Some are not as good. Those who are really good, it's nice because we can tie the training to those metrics. Like, we've got examples of, like a Florida HVAC company that cut time to truck from 12 months to 3 to 4. Think about what that means. You take a green tech and you can start putting them out on their own, or at least a little more aggressively on PMs and things like that in 3 to 4 months, right? Huge difference. We got another example of a company cut callbacks by 25%, right? What's a truck roll cost to you? $600 or something? If you can knock off 25% of that's direct to the bottom line. So it's really easy to draw the training metrics into the business metrics if the metrics are being measured. Now, beyond that, you even see things like retention numbers go way up. And we've seen now, something like, 70% will say our retention is better since we've invested in this training program. So that's been fun to watch. The other thing is companies have said we're growing faster and our revenue, our tickets are growing faster because our confidence, the confidence of our techs are higher. The customers are feeling that. Mm-hmm. They can, instead of worrying so much about some of the technical troubleshooting, they can get to the sales side of the job quicker, et cetera, when they're really confident in identifying through their improved diagnostic skills. So we're seeing it across the line, both on the revenue side and on the cost side for these companies. And like I said, like the companies who have committed to it, you see it in their statistics. And that's been a lot of fun for us as a company, because for years we promised this is what will happen with good training on this sort of like hypothesis level. Now we have the real numbers to support it. And that's been fun. I think we have something, some number, something like our customers are growing 3 times the industry rate. And that's exciting. And we've got data to back that up. And so we just believe in that ramp more than, you know, than anything else.
So I've always, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, I've always kind of believed that, you know, none of the new technology necessarily replaces, but it does enhance what we're doing. So you still need the classroom time. You still need the hands-on working on the classroom and doing that. You need the simulation time. And then recently you guys also announced a partnership with a company called XOI.
Yes.
And so tell me a little bit about how that ties back into, you know, what they're doing with the classroom, going to the simulation, to the field.
Yeah, that's great. Well, XOI, as you know, because you guys have been close to them for years, is really good in the pocket of the technician in the field when they're actually looking at the unit and they're looking for, you know, workflow and model specific stuff. They're so good at that. And so if you think about what we're really good, which is the foundational training, building those diagnostic skills, et cetera. And so if we can build their foundational skills, then they're in the field with the real equipment. And there's some continuity there. Let's say I look at a heat pump and go, "Ooh, I haven't touched a heat pump in a while. I've been dealing with, you know, split residential systems." You might take a quick look at your interplay learnings and just do a quick review. Oh, yes, I remember some of the primary things here. Now you pull out your XOI app and off you go. Now you're looking at the workflow or whatever, you know, the model-specific stuff that XOI is forming. And there's that continuity of learning. And, you know, we're just at the outset of our partnership with them where that data will start flowing back and it'll help inform what we train on. Right? If we see there's a resistance where, geez, whenever they see this type of fault, job time efficiency goes way down, meaning they don't quite understand what's happening there, what step to do next, et cetera. And now can we build some remedial training for that type of thing? So you really have an opportunity of that continuity. We talked about, you know, development happening over, you know, years. It happens over days when it comes to like, oh, well, I'm in the field the next 2 or 3 days. Your learning doesn't stop in the field, right? It should be connected to the learning you're doing in your foundational training program. And so our partnership with XOI, and we're just starting to figure out exactly how to integrate to really leverage that idea.
So training becomes a lot more prescriptive.
That's right. Yep, it does, and continuous, right? One of the challenges we had, you talk about, you know, what are the barriers? Training can be episodic, right? Like, you know, big training seasons, spring and fall, and sort of the shoulder seasons. But we think that's a bit of a mistake. We think we'd love to see more continuity around training, and a partnership with XOI enables that even more.
So put on your futurist hat.
Yeah.
What do you think the future of training looks for in closing these skill gaps and working with people? What is the future of our industry as we start to see?
Well, I think a couple of things you see. One is, you know, we talked about how there's a narrative in the nation now that the skilled trades are really a fantastic career and life opportunity. And so it's fun to see that. And you're going to see that show up in a lot of places. You're going to see more K-12 programs, right? We're getting inbounds from middle schools and high schools, more high schools. How can I stand up a trades program? So you're starting to see a recognition as we can start earlier. If there's an interest for a ninth grader who says, I'm never going to be a lawyer. Look what I like playing with my cars and I like doing these other things hands-on. What are my career options? So you're going to see more and more of that. So that's exciting. You're going to see the workforce development organizations, right? There's U.S. job centers who are, you know, taking care of the underemployed or unemployed. And they used to just say, you know, here's your Microsoft Word training, et cetera. And now they're going to start, you're going to see more programs there. It says, look, let's build mechanical electrical skills for you, foundational, because then you're going to open this whole, you know, new set of opportunities. It might be skilled trades. It might be the factory down the street. And, you know, who knows what it could be. And so you're going to see that. So you've got schools, you got workforce development. I think as we've talked about extensively today, the employers have really committed to being, you know, training organizations, at least the good ones. And so, now you've got, you know, sort of you're attacking it on three fronts. I think you'll also start seeing more like boot camp style training, right? If you think about, they talked about for years the digital skills gap. This is, let's go back 15 years, dawn of the internet, the Googles are starting to come up, Yahoos back then, and they didn't have enough coders. Well, to become a coder back then, there was really only one way. You went and got a CS, a computer science degree from a four-year institution. And those industries were going way faster than the schools could produce CS graduates. And so what evolved were things like boot camps. Here's 6 weeks, learn, you know, learn the basics and then get on the job. Doesn't mean you're, you know, a skilled coder at that point, but you're a skilled helper. And same thing I think you'll see in our industry is you'll start seeing more alternative paths, sort of quick ramps. And I think you'll see more apprenticeship programs getting down to, you know, even the mom and pops recognizing that earn and learn model is now more possible than ever because of foundational training programs that are available.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you coming out here and doing this for us. I hope to see you on a future episode that we have. For all of you out there, please go ahead and like and follow us on our channel so that you can stay in tune with all of the great episodes that we have coming up.
Thanks,
thank you so
Ben.
Much.
Great to be here.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.